Mr. Tom Evans, another person who we will be welcoming to our county of Devon within the next couple of weeks. You ready?
Yeah, so it's actually about 9 days, isn't it? I think, or even less, 8 days probably. Next week, in fact.
Yep, talking at the One Vision Foundation in Exeter. I'll put the link to that in the chat room a little bit later on when I step into producer mode. And if you weren't thinking of coming to Devon because you're thinking I live far too far away, why don't you pop to Devon for a few days and hear Tom talk? What you could do is you could plan a trip that lasts from around Thursday to next Wednesday, and you can come see Steve Judd and Tom Evans and spend a lovely few days in Devon as well. We could even sort you out with some fairly good value accommodation here at Silhain. I think we do accommodation from £20 a night for a fairly basic but beautiful a room with a beautiful view. Anyway, enough of that. Tom, how have you been? It's been a little while since we've spoken to each other, I think.
Yeah, it's been about 2 weeks. Yeah, I had an amazing week last week. Just things are just light bulbs going off all over the place, as Lumpy asked me in the chat room at the moment, which is fantastic.
Excellent. And you've got talks coming up. You're talking in Guildford, am I right? In this week?
Well, actually, this week, yeah, I've got a whole retreat day, actually, with lovely Waking Passions, who's also in the chat room. It was kind of her idea. It's called the Whole Mind Connection Day. And we've got about 10 or 12 people coming down, and we're going to do some amazing things to connect people with different bits of their awareness that maybe gets a bit forgotten about, which will be really lots of fun. So a real lot of fun and a bit of experimentation, and kind of nice that this group's come together, funnily enough, without much effort, which always bodes, I think.
Yes, lovely when that happens, isn't it? All right, well, I'll find the link to that as well, and I'll pop that in the chat room over the next hour. It's time, of course, it's the Moments of Light segment in the Big Village Radio Show on a Monday evening. We do this every Monday. Big Village kicks off at 7, where I come on with a special guest who usually does readings, and then Tom comes along with the Moments of Light segment at 8 o'clock UK time. And your very special guest this week is June Eleni Lane. Good evening to you, June.
Hello.
Hello there, how are you?
I'm good, how are you?
Oh, very well, that was remarkably easy. You sound quite surprised.
Yeah, I was kind of sat here wondering if you'd be able to hear me. It's great.
We can hear you loud and clear. It's lovely to have you on the Moments of Light segment. So what I'll do, Tom, if it's all right with you, I'll sit back and listen, and I'll play your jingles for you, and I'll be thoroughly interested in the next hour that's coming.
Thank you so much, Carl, and welcome, June Laney. It's great that you could come on tonight.
Thank you. It's great to be here. I'm looking forward.
Yeah. So listen, I've been reading your bio recently, and I don't know. I'm stumped. I don't quite know where to start because there's so much of it. You know, you started in commercial and fashion design.
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
Built up multi-million pound businesses. And now you're doing stuff which is miles away, or maybe not so miles away.
Well, maybe it's not so miles away. I mean, really, the whole thing started. I went along with a friend of mine to what used to be the Spiritualist Association of Great Britain, just for curiosity. And there I was, sat in the audience, and a woman, complete stranger who I didn't know, drew a portrait of my brother-in-law who'd been killed in an accident about 6 months before. And I was so shocked, I couldn't do anything. I sat there like a lemon in the audience. And she was working with a medium, and she drew this portrait of him, which, I mean, I knew who it was. And she gave me names. She gave me his both brothers' names, his parents' names, what he did for a living, how he was killed. And they just kept reeling this information off. And I just sat there like an idiot, not being able to say anything. And in the end, even my friends that were with me said, hey, isn't this for you? And finally, I plucked up the courage and said, actually, and I was just about to say something, and they said, is there a June in the audience? And I went, yeah, that'll be me.
Oh, wow. That's a baptism of fire, isn't it, into this world?
Wow. That was just absolutely amazing. And that's how really, that was my first encounter with soul portraits. That was called Coral Polge, who's actually in spirit herself now.
Wow. So So, and so at the time then, you were still in fashion design, is that right?
I was still in fashion, yeah. I was in fashion. So this was something that I was curious about, but never really thought that it would be something that I would delve into, because I'm very sceptical. I'm a bit like you, Tom. I'm quite science-minded, really. I was going to be a civil engineer when I was young.
Well, I was going to be a train driver or an astronaut, one of the two, that's for sure.
I could have built bridges, you could have driven trains over them.
Exactly. So so you've made an amazing transition then, and in a very similar way to me, because we didn't sign up for any of this stuff, did we?
Well, we didn't, but I figure that I've been using this stuff pretty much, you know, in my fashion career. I was using art in a way to foretell the future, if you like. You know, I'm drawing designs, I go off into my zone, and I know that when I'm in that zone, the designs that I'm drawing are going to sell. And when I'm not in that zone, then they're not going to sell. So the problem for me is, the same as you talk about, Tom, the problem for me is, how do I trigger myself into that zone on a regular basis rather than just letting it happen spontaneously?
So how do you do that? What's the secret? Let's share it with everybody.
You've got to learn to get into the right brain hemisphere. The right brain hemisphere is the creative side. The left brain hemisphere is the logical side. But, of course, the right brain hemisphere doesn't speak. It's got no language centres, which is why many, many people know things, intuit things, realise things, but they can't put it into words. Have you found that?
Well, that's funny. This day that Carl was referring to on Wednesday is all about that. And one of the things we're starting off with is learning how the right and left brain actually communicate. It's almost like learning to ride a bike from the ground up. You know, when you can ride a bike already, as we do, because we all got this process where we seem to manage our way through thinking, getting through the day. But we've forgotten how the interchange goes on. So I've devised lots of really simple exercises that reteach us how our left and right brains communicate. And I guess what's interesting about that is, as you discovered through your work, is that once you get the two working together, amazing stuff comes out the other end.
Absolutely. It is fantastic. I mean, there's a whole stream of advantages to being able to be in your whole brain, to use both sides rather than just be dominated, like most of the whole population is, by the left side these days. So unless you've actually been in a creative career where you've actually been paid money to use your right brain, most of the time, people are dominated by their left side. So I guess that was my advantage in this, really. You know, that there was a way that it was attractive to my left side to actually let go, to surrender, to allow the right side to take the lead. So I learned also a series of techniques to help me do that, which I've covered in my book, The Art of Being Psychic. So there's that information in that book there as well.
So what was the transition then? You're sitting in this audience where your brother-in-law was being drawn in front of you, and you're still at the time in the fashion design business.
Yeah.
How did this sort of segue go from that into the work you're doing now? What was the sequence of events?
Well, the thing that happened to me is that I started to get a whole load of really frightening experiences, mostly late at night, so that I couldn't sleep. And really getting my attention. I was having out-of-body experiences. I was being pulled out of my body and shot through the air so fast that I could feel the G-force on my body.
Wow.
I was spirit people talking to me. I was being pressured. I got pressure on my body, that horrible feeling when you're kind of half in and half out and you can't move. And all I really wanted was to make it stop. So I never really wanted to develop my psychic ability. All I wanted to do was make it stop. I wanted to be able to control these dreadful experiences that I couldn't understand. So that's how I started. I bumped into a friend who, by coincidence, I'd not seen for 6 years, who was studying healing. He was going to become a healer and a medium. And he gave me the heads up on this place, so I went along. And the night that I happened to pick that I could go along to see this woman to ask her what on earth was happening to me was the night that she was doing interviews for psychic development classes. And to me at the time, psychic development was a bit of a dirty word. It wasn't something that I was particularly interested in. But hey, I was so desperate, couldn't sleep, so frightened, let me go along and find out. So I did. I went along and she said, yes, I can teach you how to make that stop. I said, okay, that's all I want to do. I want to learn how to make it stop.
So I went, and how many years ago was that now?
Oh, gosh, that was in, wow, the late 80s, early 90s.
Wow.
Mm. And I did make it stop, but when I could make it stop, of course, it's like being able to drive a really fast car and knowing where the brake is.
Mm-hmm.
You want to drive fast then, don't you?
Absolutely.
Yeah, so then I developed it and still kept in the fashion business because, of course, that was my business. That was my profession. And I kind of developed this on the QT, really. I was a bit of a closet psychic for a long time.
And you come out of the closet now.
Well, yeah, but the thing is, you see, psychic ability is still a dirty word, so I tend to call it quantum field interaction now, and I'm taking it into business. I do business trainings with it as well.
Wow.
A rose by any other name.
Fantastic. Well, I must admit, I refuse to give it a name. I call it just being human, or maybe like human version 2.0 or something like that.
Yeah. Oh, I like that. Yeah, I like that a lot.
Everyone, as you know, because you train people, everyone's capable about getting more out of their of what we've been delivered, what the cards that we've got.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, one of the interesting byproducts of learning to go into my right brain is I cured myself of my fear of heights.
Oh, did you?
Oh, absolutely I did. I used one of the triggers on a regular basis. And I did a wonderful around-the-world trip to get me connected to the Earth, actually. That was my plan. At the end of last year, I went to work in Japan. I was there for about 23 days.
Mm-hmm.
And I worked all over the south of Japan. And I did private readings, spirit guides for people, connecting with their loved ones. You can have a look on my website, actually, on the portrait gallery. And mm-hmm. There are lots of soul portraits that I do where I actually draw the picture for somebody and then the client will send me a photograph of the person to give me some validation that that is really what they look like after I've done the drawing.
Mm-hmm.
All I get is an impression. I don't even see, I just draw and use click into my right brain and use this to actually draw. And then people are amazed because I'm doing actually what the lady Coral Polge did for me when my brother-in-law came through. And I do that for people now, and I did that in Japan. I travelled to Australia, to Perth, to Sydney. I had the longest 24 hours of my life, which was actually a 48-hour day, because I went over the timeline from Sydney to Hawaii. So the 28th of December was 48 hours for me. That was extraordinary.
Oh, we've gone at Christmas. You're going to have two Christmases then. Mind you, sometimes that's not such a good thing, but there you go.
Well, yeah, on this occasion it was, and then I did Hawaii and LA and I came back. And during that experience, I connected with so many spirit guides for people and got so much information from them. It was truly an extraordinary journey. It really, really was. And I actually connected for an Australian woman with the spirit guide of Leonardo da Vinci, which, again, you can have a look on my website. There's a picture of him on there. And some of the information that I was given by him just blew me away.
Oh, that's incredible. There's a book in there but in its own right then.
Oh, my God, absolutely. He explained to me the difference between ghosts and souls and spirits.
Mm-hmm.
And it all started by me asking him the question, are you really the Leonardo da Vinci that lived in the 1400s? And he said to me, well, I could say yes, and I could say no, or I could say that you're my mother, or you're my father. And in some instances, all of it would be true, and yet not. He said, but if I describe to you how it is, in your limited perspective in this dimension, because you're interpreting everything with the left side of your brain, you could possibly only understand 30% of what I'm going to tell you.
Mm-hmm.
So guess what I said?
Go on then.
I said, give me the 30%.
Give the 30%.
Yeah.
So if anyone's on this this page, which is Spirit Portrait Gallery, it's 15 of 17 I've just seen.
Okay.
Leonardo as the spirit guide. So when was the switch then? When did sort of the fashion business sort of wane and the new business start? What was the, was it like a flip switch, or did you wind one down as you wound the other one up?
I got to a point in my life in the fashion business where I'd made quite a lot of money, to be honest, Tom. So I was in a very nice situation, and I decided that suddenly my priorities changed and I wasn't really interested in that material world anymore. And of course, the fashion business is a very materialistic world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're as good as your last collection, you're as good as your last sale. It's high pressured. You've got to live it, eat it, breathe it, drink it in order to be successful. And I did. I did that for 20 years. And it was extraordinary. I loved it. And I loved the travel. And I loved everything about it. But one day I just thought, I don't want to associate with this anymore, with this type of way of being, with these type of people. So I went back to university. I went back to college and I studied Ayurvedic medicine, believe it or not.
where was that?
That was at the College of Ayurveda in London, and through a correspondence course out of New Mexico with Dr. David Frawley. And
wow.
I got the flags up from it by Deepak Chopra, of course. Mm-hmm. You know, his book Quantum Healing.
Yes.
And then I started to really become very, very impressed with what I saw in Ayurveda, and I studied it for quite a long time. And it kind of fell in line with the psychic development, believe it or not. And in fact, it was through Ayurveda and yoga that I discovered one of my right brain triggers. And I can share this with you on air, actually. The listeners might like to give it a go, and those in the chat room might like to give
it
a go.
Let's do it.
Should we do it?
Let's do it.
I noticed that when I was practicing yoga, my yoga teacher of 20 years was very keen to do alternate nostril breathing. And if you've done yoga, of course, I'm sure that you've done that.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of asked him for the ins and outs and why is we do that. And he said, well, actually, what happens is I'm sorry, that was me. Let me turn that off.
Yeah.
When you breathe through the right nostril, it goes up and it takes prana across into the left side of the brain and vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're actually doing alternate nostril breathing, what's happening is you're balancing the brain. You're actually doing brain balancing. You're putting as much prana into both sides by doing this. So I decided that because most of us are so dominated by our left brain, wouldn't it be great if we just blocked off the right nostril and put the prana into the right side of the brain, which didn't much please my yoga teacher, but it actually worked in some degree. So what I do, it's very subtle, is I block off the right nostril, breathe through the left, and keep in that breath for about 10 to 20 breaths, and all of a sudden, you really start to feel wonderful. Because when you're in the right brain, as I know that you know, it's just the most fantastic feeling. The right brain laughs. Left brain doesn't know how to laugh. Left brain covers up embarrassment by false laughter. You know, you've all told a joke to somebody and they go, oh, yeah, that's really funny. But they don't actually laugh because they're in their left brain.
No, that's very weird because we've not swapped that tip yet, have we? You very kindly interviewed me a few weeks back for My Spirit Radio.
I don't think we
spoke about nostril breathing. I'm going to just share something in the chat room because I came across that too, and it's one of the techniques that I use on all my talks. It gets everyone in the right mode. So I've just put a little link to an MP3 in the chat room for everybody. But it's so powerful, isn't it?
Well, we're all reading from the same matrix, Tom, so I'd be surprised if we weren't doing the same triggers.
Exactly. Which is great. It works an absolute treat. It works a treat. And if you're doing anything creatively, it just works a treat. And it's great before you start writing or before you start painting or whatever you're doing.
Book as well, and that it's been been in there since 2006, but I've been using it before that because as I studied Ayurveda, one of the Sri Lankan doctors told me of an incident that he had way back in the 1980s. He's been using this. And he was on a train in India. And if you've ever been on a train in India, you know what I mean. There are people everywhere. And a guy went into a panic attack and he started having hypertension. And they were shouting for a doctor. And of course, this doctor was on there, but he didn't have his medical bag. So he couldn't actually give the guy a shot, an injection to calm him down. So basically jumped on top of him and blocked off his right nostril. And within 5 minutes, the guy was cool, really calm.
That'd be great for kids then, wouldn't it, if they get in a bit of a panic?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, I do a retreat annually on the Isle of Man at Brightlife. And when I went there the year before last, having gone the previous year, a woman stopped me and she came running up to me and hugged me. She said, "I thank you so much. You saved my life." I said, "I beg your pardon." She said, I was out of my depth in water and I remembered your right brain trigger and I did it. And I was actually able to stay afloat and I was rescued.
Isn't that amazing? And it's got so many applications. While I posted that link online, someone sent me a message saying it cured their headache as well.
Aha, okay.
Yeah, so there's all these lovely things that happen just by getting in tune with our breath. Now, talking about getting in tune, I believe we've got the show jingle coming up any minute from lovely Carl, who's waiting finger on button to press it, so we'll let that all happen. And Lady Lane,
you're listening to the Barefoot Broadcast, made possible by the generosity of Tom Evans and the art and science of Lightbulb Moments.
Good evening, everybody. Speaking with June Lenny Lane this evening. I'm Tom Evans, and as Carl says, this is the Moments of Light show. And what's interesting about this conversation this evening is that we're talking about left and right brains, and I've come up this whole field of ideas and idea generation, I guess, from an engineering perspective. And speaking with June Lenny tonight, this is from a kind of artistic perspective. After you got involved with the Ayurveda, you started the psychic art, isn't that right?
Yeah. This is where science and art meet each other. You know, with people like Leonardo da Vinci.
So if you're like me, right, and my drawings still look like I'm a sort of 5-year-old child, can you get someone like me to draw and paint with some degree of aptitude?
Absolutely, because if you trigger into the right brain, then it's not you that's doing the drawing. I actually can't draw portraits. That's not me that's drawing. I can't do it if I'm triggered into my left brain. You have to surrender and allow the energy to help to guide you. And what actually happens is that the people, the consciousness that are in spirit that no longer have a physical body, impress their images from their residual energy of their memory of when they were in life. So I'm literally drawing blind. I can't see what I'm drawing because if I could see what I was drawing, it would be a mess. You know, it really is the difference between inspirational and automatic. If you're a good artist, then you can see in your mind's eye and then you can draw, which is inspirational. But that way of drawing is actually quite slow. If you're doing it automatic, you can literally do a portrait sometimes in 30 seconds.
So the next question is, when's your next course and how can we all sign up for it?
Oh, I'm going to be on Santorini in September. Come to Santorini, do a retreat with me for 4 days, 14th of September.
14th of September, that sounds great. So we'll put a link up for that in the chat room. I'll be flying back from South Africa on the 14th of September, but I've definitely got, because you're only based in London, aren't you? You got any workshops coming from London as well?
Yeah, some workshops as well in London. If you have a look on my events page on the website, there's various things going on there. I've started with Sue Allen at the College of Healing and Intuition in London, in central London, and I'll be doing a workshop there as well, either in October or November, or both, in fact. So that's going on, and I'll be doing some mandala workshops as well in Surrey and in London.
Well, Santorini sounds absolutely amazing. Really, really fantastic.
It's actually a volcanic island, so it's a great place to make mandalas. Mandalas is something else I do. That's my second book, Mandala, the Art of Creating Future. This is where I actually truly believe that, you know, people never build a house without making plans, but they live a life without making plans, which to me is absurd.
Isn't it?
Yeah, you've got to be able to draw out your life. And if you're drawing your intention into mandalas, then amazing things are going to happen. You know, it's just quite incredible. It took me about 2 or 3 months to manifest my intentions with mandalas. I've got to the stage now where my latest one was manifest in 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
It's awesome.
And you're doing that. There's one I noticed you got on the 8th of October, Awakening Events, Mandala and Sound Workshop in Bagshot, Surrey, with Ian Dale.
Yeah, with Ian Dale. Yeah. So we're doing sound and vision. So Ian does the sounds and I do the artwork. That's a fantastic day. Really brilliant day.
And will people that go on that day, will they be able to learn how to do mandalas?
They'll learn to do clearing mandalas as well as manifestation mandalas.
So let's just wind back then. What is a mandala, and what's your version of them? Because you seem to do more with them than just draw them.
Oh, absolutely. Well, again, there's if you look on the products page on my website, I've just done a series of 13 mandalas on postcards to help people out with various intentions.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, mandala, it's a Sanskrit word, mandala. It's in two parts, manda, which means spirit, essence, or energy.
Mm-hmm.
And when you put la on the end of any Sanskrit word, it turns it into a container for the subject. So mandala, an exact transliteration, means container for energy. Now, a lot of people think mandala means circle, and you can see why that's actually been thought, because, of course, a circle is a perfect container for energy.
But it doesn't.
Yeah, it doesn't mean it's limited to being a circle. It can be a geometric shape. In fact, Tom, you and I are both mandalas.
And so is everybody else on the planet, is that right? There?
Exactly. And so is the Earth. And she is round. We're all containers for energy. But the difference between us is that we have so many thoughts and so many intentions. They tend to get lost along the way. But if you can focus for a few minutes at a time and put a specific intention into a piece of artwork, then what you're doing is you're capturing that intention within the artwork that then continues to broadcast your intention to you on a regular basis, reminding you, you want this, you want this, you want this, you want this, regularly. Even when you're sleeping, when you're eating, when you're doing something else, it's constantly in your energy reminding you of the thing that you want.
So in a modern day way then, because I'm a great fan of mind mapping.
Yeah.
And if I think about it, all my mind maps follow some sort of circular or oval pattern. And in that mind map, I've got all the things either I'm working on, I might be working on a book, or I've got a mind map which is going to drive my workshop on Wednesday. I might have a mind map which is my goals. And in doing that mind map, I'm actually creating a form of mandala.
You are indeed, and you may benefit a lot if you were actually to put the intention into that mind map as you create it, because it would be even more powerful. So let's say you're creating a mind map for a workshop. What's your intention for that workshop? And put that into the mind map. Think intention with everything.
Yes.
Where intention goes, energy flows. And the only thing that can stop it is fear, because fear holds it back when you think that there's a lack. Because there's no lack of anything.
Well, that's very, very powerful. I've got a question in the chat room then from Jackie Walker, lovely Jackie Walker, who's saying, what's the difference between a mandala and a vision board?
Well, a vision board is a mandala, really, but the problem with vision boards is that you didn't make them yourself. So you're taking magazine clippings. And what you've got to bear in mind is when you're taking other people's photographs, other people's drawings, you were never really clear what their intention was when they took that photograph or made that drawing. So it will contain a little bit of that other person's intention, which might detract a bit from your intention. Like, for example, I've got a friend who's an actor, and she had a vision board with a certain actor, which I won't mention her name, in her vision board because she's a very glamorous actress, but actually her personal life stinks. And I said to her, do you really want to have this actress's personal life? She said, oh, my God, no. And she took it out instantly.
Cool. It's very subtle, isn't it?
Very subtle. Very subtle, but very, very powerful.
Right. So now, one of the things that Tony Bazan... One of the things Tony Bazan says is always, you know, put in the centre of your mind map the thing that you're thinking about. But if you replace that, which is very subtle again, not with the thing you're thinking about, but with the intention for whatever the thing you're thinking about is, then that's going to increase its power.
Oh, my God, that's so important. And to get the wording right, because, for example, I've dealt with a lot of people who have wanted to actually become thinner, become slimmer. So... basically, they said, I want to lose weight. And that's dreadful because two reasons why that's dreadful. You set up to your unconscious mind that you want to lose something. That the subconscious mind says, I ain't losing anything. So you set up a battle to start with. And then you set, the second thing is that you're focusing on weight. Whatever you focus on, you bring to you. So no wonder you've got a yo-yo diet thing going on because you're trying to lose weight. No, I want to be slim. I want to be a certain size. I want to be light. That's your intention, not to lose anything.
So let me ask you a question then, Gina Laney. If we've got people that are listening that have got pen and paper or in front of them, could we take a guided live mandala drawing exercise? Would that be possible?
We could do. The thing is that we'll need to have an intention. So part of the work that I do is to help people to hone down their intention. Like, for example, people may think, oh, I want to sell my house. But again, you see, that's about losing something, getting rid of something. We don't do that. We say, I want to attract the perfect buyer.
Mm-hmm.
And there are subtle differences in this way. And you don't really have to be a good artist to do this as well, because I'm looking at the chat as well. I think it's Jackie. It says, if you don't draw well, you don't have to be able to draw. What's important is you can just allow the drawing to come from the place of happiness, of when you're focused on your intention. And you can just draw circles and scribbles. As long as you put the wonderful energy in, it's going to look pleasing to the eye, because guess what? You'll be able to feel the energy that you put in.
Wow, and you'd proceed this then with some nostril breathing.
Proceed it with the nostril breathing, and you also proceed it with a clearing mandala. I would actually like to talk people through doing a clearing mandala, if that would be okay with you. We've got a full moon coming up next weekend, and it's really good to do clearing mandalas on the full moon.
So I've got a bit of paper in front of me and a pen.
Okay. So this is a clearing mandala. So what I need you to do is think about all the things that you're frightened of, all the things that upset you, all the things that you're angry about, and literally like that, all of those things down and put it onto the paper. So what you're actually doing is you're drawing out the anger.
Mm-hmm.
You're drawing out the anger. You're drawing out the frustration. You're drawing out the fear that you can't have what you want, which is really, really, really important.
Wow. So that is incredible.
Yeah, because once you've got it out of your body, because everybody tells you, all the gurus are saying to you, don't get upset, just let it go. But nobody tells you how. This is a physical how-to get all this angst out of your system. You literally can scribble it and draw it out. And you can get angry while you're doing it. Some people cry and shout when we're on retreat. They really do, you know. There's black, there's red, there's all the passionate colours. It just comes out into this big well of negative energy. And then guess what we do? We burn it.
Ah, so mega symbolic then.
Oh, mega, we send it to the light. And people stand around in a big circle as we put all of their drawings into this bonfire and we release. And as we're releasing, we take a big breath in and we release. We bring our shoulders up to our ears and we release. We make fists. We release. We clench our buttocks. We release. We grind our teeth and we release. So the whole process is about releasing the stuff that no longer serves our highest good. And then you're
with a bit of paper. Oh, with some paper and some pens. That's incredible.
And some intention, of course.
Yeah.
Intention is, my intent is to release anything that no longer serves my highest good.
So that, the clearing mandala is the first thing to do.
Mm. And people say to me, by the way, but I feel really angry about such and such and such who did this to me and said this to me. If I put them into the mandala, will I be wishing them harm? Because they're worried about like a voodoo situation. But you know what? That's not the case. What you're putting into the drawing is how you feel about that person, which is really good to get rid of. Especially if you're angry with them.
Yeah, of course, because all that all external anger is really self-anger at the end of the day anyway.
Absolutely. And what this process, but Tom, I've seen people change their lives with this very simple little exercise. And it's something that you can share. It's great for kids. Kids love it. It gets rid of lots of angst in kids. I've got students who are teachers. They use it with their kids all the time. It's absolutely brilliant. And it does change lives. It gets rid of disease. It's the best therapy I think I've ever had. It's very cathartic.
Sounds good. And how much is that all in the book as well?
This is in my book. It's in the Mandala book, Mandala, the Art of Creating Future.
Wow. So how does the future side of it manifest then? So do you start to do mandalas then to define your ideal future?
Well, yeah. I mean, I start off by teaching people one function mandala first. So it may be that they want to attract the perfect buyer for their house. It may be that they want to attract peace in their life. It may be that they want a new relationship. I often do relationship mandalas with people. I've got some great stories about those. Absolutely fabulous. Also, it may be something smaller to begin with. And then, of course, once they've manifested that, and they realize that they can do it, wow, they become very powerful intenders. I was doing a retreat in Somerset about 3 years ago, and a lady decided that she was in a relationship that no longer served her, that she had no financial means to be independent and get out of that relationship and move away from him. So she asked me to help her to make a mandala to actually create her own space. So we did that. We did the mandala for her to create her own space. And then I didn't hear from her for about 6 months. And there was a by chance telephone call whereby she was connected with Ian, who I do these mandala workshops with. And he said to her, "Hey, Jo, how's your mandala doing?" She said, "What mandala? What are you talking about?" So he reminded her. And then all of a sudden the phone went silent. She said, "Oh, my God, I've left the mandala in the other house." And she went and she took the mandala and she took it down off the wall and she kissed it and honored it and thanked it and was very grateful to it. And from that point on, she became the most powerful mandala maker. And she's created all sorts of things since then. Because what happened was she was already living in the house. She'd left the guy all within 6 months and she'd even forgotten that she'd done the mandala to do it.
Well, that's incredible, isn't it? So, one of the preconceptions I've had about mandalas, because this is the way you see them, is that they have to be very intricate. You've got to be an amazing artist. So no. This would put off, like, most people from even going down there. And what you're saying is, with a bit of paper and a pencil, you can just achieve amazing things through them.
And a clear intention. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
You can get my book on Amazon.
It's in the chat room already, and it's going to be on my wish list as soon as this show's finished, I tell you. Wonderful.
Thanks, those things really are in there. And yes, of course, you can create your future through your intention. And and we already, you know, and we already do. The thing is that we create an unintentional intention because none of us are very clear about how to make an intention and how to really simplify that intention so that the universe can understand it. It's all about being simple, going to the bottom line and choosing love, not fear.
And if you try and make intentions when you're still carrying some baggage, that's going to dilute them again and deflect them.
Well, the thing is, it was funny because I had a woman wanted to do a relationship mandala, and I sent her away and did it for homework, and she brought it back to me, and I took one look at it, and I went, oh, my God. She went, no, I don't like it either. I said, you know what you've done? She said, no. I said, you've put all your fear about what you don't want in a relationship into that drawing, so let's use it as a clearing, and let's burn it. So that's what we did. We actually used it as a clearing, and we burnt it, and then she made a new one that she really, really liked, and that one was much more successful.
Wow, and so the process is absolutely key here.
The thoughts, the intention is what's key, and the fact is that when you're actually drawing down your intentions, the joy of it is, as long as you can focus for just a few minutes at a time whilst you're drawing, it can be very powerful, and when your focus shifts, which inevitably it does, because we have thoughts that come into our mind. They change, I don't know, 7 or 8 times every 30 seconds. It's not easy to focus intention. You know, you need to be a lama to be able to sit and meditate with a focused intention for extended periods of time. But if you can actually focus for 2 or 3 minutes at a time, you can always stop drawing when your focus shifts and then start drawing again when you pull it back. That's the way that I like to teach people to do it on retreat, that we actually learn to stop and start as we're making mandalas.
Mm-hmm. And can you do a form of mandala with words as well as with drawing?
I do put words into my mandalas as well. But mm-hmm. Do you mean a spoken word or a written word?
A written word, or either really. Yeah.
Well, a written word, yes, because it goes into a mandala. It becomes a container for energy. But the spoken mm-hmm. word is a mantra. That's also a container for energy. But the thing about mantra is that once it's spoken, it's gone. Whereas with something that's written down, it's contained. It's there. And it reminds you. You don't have to keep repeating it because it's there. You've done it. So that's the power of art. You know, the power of using art and colour. And by the way, it came to me through this link with Leonardo da Vinci. I just have to share this with you because it's so important to me. And I really want to share this with the listeners. That you know about crop circles.
Yes.
We've kind of heard about them. And we've heard that some of them are not particularly real ones. They're done as hoaxes. But there are ones that are unexplained. And I was told that these crop circles are mandalas. They are containers for energy of intention. And the people that are doing them, the beings, other dimensional beings that are actually putting them there, are doing it to get messages to us. And they're doing it through the food chain. I'm going to say that again. They're doing it through the food chain because these mandalas are harvested and they're put into our food chain. And they act almost like homeopathy. They go in on a very subtle level into our food chain, and they're telling our DNA what to do. That's why it's very important that you eat whole foods, because the earth is telling your DNA what to do. If you're eating plastic food, you're not connected.
Gotcha. Now, we'll come back to DNA in a minute, but I just wanted to ask you about Leonardo's Vitruvian Man, because I suppose that's the mandala, isn't it?
Yes, indeed, yeah.
Yeah. Now, before we had a little interchange on Facebook, didn't we? We were in the O-Books Facebook page, and I reminded myself that I'd set this interview up with you on the 8th of the 8th at 8 p.m.
Incredible.
And you were talking then about how those numbers help with the change in DNA and got the power to activate the change.
It's a game.
How do numbers factor into all of this?
Numbers are also mandalas. Everything is a container for energy. The whole planet is a container for energy. And the way that we're able to use that those containers for our benefit is by making our own mandalas, or at least by using mandalas that have been made for a very specific purpose. Like, for example, self-worth mandala is a great one to do. I recommend everybody to do a self-worth mandala. And if you can't, at least get download a self-worth mandala from my website. Because when your self-worth changes, your life changes. Especially,
wow.
Especially for women. Because women tend to, because we are mothers, we tend to put other people before us. And it's really important that we're able to at least do something for ourselves because we're worth it.
I've got you. So every single container of artistic form, especially when it's being loaded with intent, is a real power to be wrestling with.
It's a powerhouse, absolutely, and people don't get this. You know, if you've got artwork hanging in your home, or if you've got a space in your home that you don't feel quite right in, have a look at the artwork. See what's been broadcast. You know, are there pictures of you looking angry? You know what that's going to broadcast?
Yeah. Really, or even if you're not angry on the picture, but at the time it was taken, you were harbouring some anger or some lack of self-worth.
Yeah.
Cool. This is very, very subtle, powerful, and simple all at the same time.
Yeah. The simpler, look, the simpler it is, the better I like it. You know, when otherwise it gets very left brain and it gets very complicated. And I can't go there, because when things become that complicated, I'm losing interest. If it's not simple, if it's not straightforward, to me, it can't work. You know, I'm looking at this huge force of energy, the big omniversal mind, and the simpler you can be, the more powerful your intent is going to be. You know, when we hide it in a whole myriad of excuses and idiosyncrasies and complications, circumstances, it all goes pear-shaped. I've seen it.
Well, I didn't know we were going to go down this road in this show tonight, but I'm absolutely thrilled and glad that we did, because I'm liking the simplicity a lot.
It's really important. You know, this is what Leonardo da Vinci shared with me. A lot of the things that he shared with me was, especially, this is one more thing that I also would like to say, because to me it's really, really important. Nobody prepares us for death.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we never really prepare for death. We hardly even prepare for life, but we certainly don't prepare for death. And that there is a point, and I know that in the Tibetan tradition, they do prepare for death. The Tibetan Book of Living and Dying, the Tibetan Book of the Dead, is all about getting into the preparation. And that when we die, in the astral, there are a series of, I'm going to call them media lights, because, you know, we've got media lights in this dimension. We know what media lights are. You know, there are tabloids out there where some people believe every word that's written in there, and other people look at them and think, oh, please, don't give me that. That's a load of rubbish. It's just that particular tabloid spouting lies. So we know that there are media lights out there that will take us along a path if we're stupid enough to go there. Right?
Mm-hmm.
There's advertising out there that will lead us down a certain path. And although it seems to be telling us the truth, it isn't quite the way it's made out to be. That type of media light is what I'm talking about. And of course, we have them in this dimension. But what he told me was that there are also those in the astral plane. So that when we go over into the astral, when we first pass away, we're all told to follow the light. I'm going to shock you now, Tom. All I'm going to say is follow the light within. Don't necessarily follow the light that you see out there. Okay?
Well, that's very interesting. So it's the inner light is the real guide. Yeah.
The inner light is the real guide. The Outer Light is the media guide, and that's going to get you caught up into a cycle of life, death, and rebirth. You're going to be a slave on this planet for the rest of your life if you follow that one.
Wow. Well, listen, you've been triggering light bulb moments in me every minute in this call. It's absolutely fascinating. What you made me realise is that nearly everything I've been working on without knowing it for the last God knows how many years is I've been creating mandalas all over the place.
Mm.
And without knowing it, I've been putting largely good intent into them, you know, because I've always had, I'm not just doing it for that reason. And I guess it's why they've been working so well.
Absolutely. But it's even more powerful now when you start to put more conscious intent in.
And exactly, yeah. And I've even created a three-dimensional mandala without knowing it.
Yeah, well, your book is a mandala, light bulb moment. It's a energy, just as my book is a mandala in itself.
I wasn't even thinking about it, but you're right. I've actually come across, I'm working on this thing called the year or so, which the clue gives it away. It's a cube, and it's got stuff in it like you wouldn't believe, and it's a really, really powerful tool. But here's me not realizing that it and everything in it is very mandala like.
Okay, somebody on the chat room said, "What is this lady on about?" I'll tell you what I'm on about, Lumpy Custard. I'm on about intention. That's what I'm on about. I'm giving you a tool to be able to focus your intention in such a way that it can become consciously powerful instead of being your worst enemy because you're not conscious of your intention and it's causing you to become fat when all you want to do is lose weight. You know, that's what I'm talking about. I'm talking about being clear. I'm talking about being on purpose. You have
to be on purpose. We're not saying that Lumpy Custard is actually fat, by the way, are we?
Not at all.
Lovely, lovely stuff. I'm really enjoying this. So let's just recap. So you've got a load of stuff going. If you want to work with you, you've got a fantastic retreat going on in Santorini in September.
Yeah, I'm so looking forward. It'll be great. And the weather will be good too.
Oh, absolutely. Well, because you'll put your intention into that and create a fantastic weather system out there.
Yeah.
And then we've also got the 8th of October, you're going to be in Bagshot with Ian Dale.
Yeah.
And do you do some things in the evening? Do you like a regular evening class? Because we had a common client turn up, didn't we? This is really weird. As soon as we got in touch over the interview for O-Books, for the light bulb book, a client of yours turned up in my life, even though that we hadn't spoken about her.
Yes, I actually do teach evening classes as well, but the information for those is also on my website.
Yeah, and Carl's just said in the chat room as well, as you can probably see, that you've got an open invitation to come down to Sealhane in Devon.
Well, I did come and do the Mind Body Spirit Festival in Devon about 2 or 3 years ago. That was fun. I could come and do that again.
That's great. Well, that's great. So loads of ways people can work with you. And do you also work with people one-to-one as well, Ginalini?
Yeah, I do one-to-one sessions. I do soul portraits for people, both of loved ones and spirit guides. I do mandala sessions for people. And the most recent thing that I've just started to do is something that I'm calling circles in the timeline, where I'm actually connecting the past with the future. I'm doing circles so that my theory is that it's okay to learn from the past, although learning from the past can be quite limiting. But when you start to connect and to be able to learn from the future, then, wow, the sky's the limit.
Well, I'll totally agree with that because I've been teaching authors for the last couple of years how to connect with their future selves that knows the words they haven't written yet and get them sent back to the present. And I guess that's a similar kind of circular technique, isn't it?
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm doing, but I'm doing it through artwork and I'm doing it through a series of revisits into the past, because by revisiting into the past, you're setting up visits from the future self.
Wow, wow. You know, we've been doing so many of the same things having not met. Isn't that fantastic? I love that.
Well,
so
it's one matrix, isn't it? And if you're
it's
two,
one matrix. Yeah. So what's next for you? What's the next project?
The next project, I'm actually writing a children's adventure story. At the moment, I won't say too much more about that because it's still in the pipeline. But rainbowgang.com. And it's going to be including a lot of this work on a level that can go into a more wide stream audience.
Well, we must have a chat one day about the stuff that's coming up for books in the next 12 months or so. You can do it now, but books are going to go very, very interactive. And you'll be able to have books where people can actually fill their own mandalas in the book using iPads and tablet technology, which would be kind of interesting. And that'd be great.
That
so
could be something very interesting for the children's book as well, because that's all about dreams and different forms of looking at reality and visiting the future self and pulling it back through. And yes, interesting stuff.
Interesting times, eh, as well. Oh, fantastic. Well, listen, it's been really good to chat tonight. I just wonder whether you'd like to leave everyone that's listening with a thought to drive them over the next week or so.
A thought to drive them over the next week. Okay. So, every morning, before you actually get out of bed, if you can spare 30 seconds to a minute, clear your intentions for the day. And I'm not talking about focusing on what you don't want. I'm focusing on what you do want. And if you can focus on what you do want every morning for a whole week, watch how your life changes.
And would you do that with doing a mandala, a daily mandala as well?
You could actually write it down and just make the mandala the written word, and then look at the mandala at the end of the day, look at the word and see how much of it came true for you that day, and then acknowledge it, because you have to acknowledge it. If you're making mandalas like the story that I told you and you're not acknowledging them, then it doesn't give you any power to do it again, and the facts speak for themselves. If you've actually created a mandala and it's worked, that's as much of the fact as you need to know. It works for you. And if it works for you, acknowledge that it worked for you, and then you can do it again and again and again and again.
Well, that is an absolutely lovely thought. That's absolutely fantastic. Well, you know, it was very coincidental about this whole thing. And I didn't plan this. You know, when you say, I haven't planned it. But next week's guest is a lady called Whitney Fair from Creatively Fit. Have you come across her?
No, I don't think so, Patrick.
She is an amazing lady, yeah, and guess what she does? She runs art classes for people that have never drawn before, using left and right brain techniques. I'll just put a link in the chat room. She's an American lady,
okay. And
again, she takes on people that said, I can't draw, you know, and says, well, you can't draw because if you run that script in your head that you can't draw, you'll never be able to draw. And she gets them drawing. And I got involved with a lovely thing that she did online, which was a doodle a day challenge. And I've done several things like this in the past where you do like a blog a day for a month. And there was a doodle a day for a month. And I've got to tell you, you know, this person here that said earlier that, you know, you draw like a five-year-old. When you get that left brain out of the way and you just let yourself go, it's amazing what comes out. And then when you put it up there and people say, you know what, this is quite good stuff, and you don't consider your art to be any good, do you? Or we're kind of trained in from school that it isn't any good.
Yeah, I was just going to say, if you go into a class full of kids of four or five and ask who can draw, every hand goes up. By the time you go into an 11-year-old class, three or four maybe, if you're lucky.
Yeah, well, I remember when I was 13 at school, I was given this choice. Do you want to do art or science? And there wasn't an art and science, it was an art or science.
Question.
Oh, bye. That's good. So, Carl, are you back in the room, Carl?
I'm here, Tom. June, Eleni, that was so fantastic. Thank you very much for a thoroughly fantastic hour that's just whizzed by.
Thank you. Fantastic. I really enjoyed it.
Where's it gone? It's been fantastic. Really good to chat and I've learned so much. And it's always good when you learn a lot from your broadcasting, isn't it?
Oh, I always do. Yeah. Oh,
yeah.
Great. I love it.
Wonderful. All right. Well, do come back again sometime soon, June Eleni, won't you, and join us?
Thank you. I'd love to. And thanks,
and Tom. Yeah, thank you to Tom for bringing you along tonight and doing us justice every week here on the Moments of Light show, on the Barefoot Broadcast, on the Big Village show on a Monday. Tom, you take care. June Eleni, thank you very much.
Adieu. Thanks, June Eleni.
You're listening to The Barefoot Broadcast, www.thebarefootbroadcast.com.